After these messages, we'll be right back.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
Are you in good hands?
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome to After These Messages, where we bring you hot takes on commercial breaks. That's right. We are here to talk about TV commercials, good ones and bad ones, and ones where people say weird shit like this.
You're living in some kind of moon house hovering over Seattle like the mothership. I got so many cars, I get stuck in my own traffic.
My name is Andrew Walsh, and I'm here with Genevieve Haz. Hello, Veeves.
Hi, Andrew.
Coming up today, I heard somebody say that it was like the... It's like living in the 90s again as far as like topics that were trending. I remember like O.J. Simpson was one of them because he died recently. There's another one that I'm not remembering right now, which I really probably should have thought of before I started this idea. Oh, I know Conan O'Brien trending again because he was on that show Hot Ones.
Yeah.
And so there's like Conan all over the place, O.J. all over the place, and Jerry Seinfeld all over the place. He was in a New Yorker interview recently that was on the New Yorker podcast, and I think also maybe it made its appearance in print, and a lot of people talking about this, and that gave you an idea for today's show.
It did. You know, this New Yorker Radio Hour that interview that Jerry Seinfeld did with editor-in-chief of the New Yorker, David Remnick, was making the rounds, and it definitely like got on my radar. And I always, you know, I do click on any story that's like old white famous guy says things aren't as good as they used to be, which is this is a version of that. But that, you know, doesn't have a direct connection to advertising. But then by coincidence, I happen to also see that Seinfeld has a new movie out. This is the first time he's written. He wrote B-Movie, which was like an animated feature. But this is a live action feature that he wrote and directed and I think stars in that's appearing on Netflix. It's dropping later this week. And I happened to see a promotion for it, so like a commercial for it, that made me just sort of start thinking about Jerry Seinfeld in the advertising space. He is definitely like in the zeitgeist because of this this interview, which he, of course, was doing to promote the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's all of a piece, right?
Yeah.
And I was, again, prepared to be outraged. And I am outraged. I mean, I have a baseline outrage, I think, like the, you know.
You wake up outraged.
I wake up outraged because I'm, quote, paying attention. But I also think that there's a little bit more to I listened to the whole interview, and I think there's a little bit more to what he said in context that's worth unpacking a little bit. And also just kind of revisiting, like, what is Jerry Seinfeld's relationship to advertising?
Yeah, great. So we have a bunch of Jerry Seinfeld ads to talk about. Also, we'll check in with the Ad Council as always. We got a jingle that will play for you. And also got an email. That's what they're called.
Email. Right? Talk about the 90s.
It's like an electronic mail. Ooh, quick aside.
Yeah.
Quick aside.
Sure.
Oh, God. This is just something I want to talk to you about that really has nothing to do with advertising.
Seems like a good time.
Yeah. So we both play Wordle, right?
Yeah.
So this is related to the word email. Okay.
Right.
So it's not totally out of the blue. And I know we need to be a little bit, I was going to say we need to be a little bit disciplined with time today, but I cannot say that and then launch into what I'm about to launch into. But if you'll allow this.
My only time constraint is I want to go to Target. That's not that big of
a
time.
It's also a very, very nice day, and I wanted to get this done before we start our evening activities, and I don't want to waste your sunlight hours doing this in the basement.
Burning daylight.
But we're burning daylight by me over-explaining this. But so a while back, a long time ago, one of the Wordle words was email, five-letter word, email.
Sure.
And a lot of people were very outraged about that. They thought, no, that's
not me.
That's not me either. They're like, that stands for electronic mail. And I'm just like, well, nobody says electronic mail. Like, I'm totally fine with that. But whatever. I get mad at the New York Times puzzles all the time.
Sure.
But what I thought was interesting, I'm not trying to call anybody out or say they're wrong, but I almost feel like I'm being gaslit, sort of. Like, because I'm so out of step with other people. Recently, one of the words was intro, I-N-T-R-O.
Yeah.
Now, I use the word intro all the time because, like, I call the, you know, tape that I play at the top of a podcast intro tape, right?
Right.
Or you take intro to psychology, or if there's a if you have an album, specifically like a hip hop album, maybe the first track will be intro, you know? So I know that we use it, but to me, that is definitely an abbreviation. Like when I say intro, it feels to me like, well, I should be saying introduction.
Well, let me ask you this then. What does outro stand for?
Outroduction.
And you think outroduction is a word?
I almost got away with that. Okay, so
I would never say intro because intro is a nickname.
No.
A nickname is for friends, and intro is no friend of mine.
That was pretty good, actually. That was
Thanks.
A good David Cross.
Pretty good, right?
Let me be very clear. I don't feel strongly that intro didn't belong in the Wordle. I'm also fine with intro being in the Wordle. But I thought, well, the people who were mad about email must be really mad about intro.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to a little place I like to call social media.
Oh.
And I asked people, like, hey, for those of you who are outraged about email, how do you feel about intro? I'm like, I'm fine with
both
of them.
You just went to the social media store and yelled this out on the main floor?
It was a Target, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just was yelling it. And then I got very negative feedback. Like very negative feedback. No, I'm trying to keep this brief, but yeah, I went to the Slack page for my other podcast, Too Beautiful to Live.
Okay.
Where there's a whole
where you would
group.
Think it would be a receptive audience to your various
I expect them,
witticisms and what have you.
I expect them to respect me and my authority. no, they have a group in the Slack that is dedicated. It's called like Words with Tens or something.
Okay.
So they share. There's a whole group of listeners who share their Wordles, talk about their Wordles or whatever. So I'm
okay.
Like, okay. And I know that some of those folks were really upset about the emails. And again, I realize I have a microphone right now. I'm not trying to say like, I'm right and I get the final word on this, but I was just sort of flabbergasted that I said, for those of you who were outraged about email, would you say intro is worse or better, like whatever? And almost everybody was like, no, I am still furious about email and I'm totally okay with intro. And like, again, I'm fine with both of them, but I cannot wrap my head around being upset about email, but intro, which just seems like a word that is chopped in half to me, is okay. It seems like if you're going to be mad about email, you got to be mad about intro. I guess I'm out of step because everybody was telling me
it's hard
that
for me to relate
wrong.
Because I don't find either of them to be even slightly problematic.
Uh huh. Yeah.
So
okay.
I think either outrage is ridiculous. And not ridiculous in the sense of like it's ridiculous to be mad about something so trivial.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think we should get mad about very trivial things.
Yes, of course.
I just think these trivial things are not the correct trivial things
mm-hmm.
to be mad about.
Yeah. And again, for me, it wasn't that I was outraged at either one of these words. I just can't understand how people who think email isn't a word think intro is. But I just wanted to get your take on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I guess it's hard. I guess I can. To me, they are equally permissible.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose by the same token, they might be equally impermissible.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't remember the last time I've seen somebody stylize email with a hyphen
AP says the hyphen
mail.
Is done.
Oh, was that a proclamation?
I mean, I feel like I recall when this
uh-huh.
happened in, you know, I pay attention to AP style stuff occasionally
yeah.
because it's sort of a occupational hazard.
Yeah. Anyway, would you say it's problematic that I started the show with this conversation?
Well, I picked a show topic that's
commercials.
That's so tangential. That's mostly just like news, and I, you know, sort of burrowed an ad-shaped hole in it.
I started to say something. I received an email from a listener is what I want to say. I received an electronic,
oh, an electronic
communication
mail.
From
yeah.
a listener, an e-com, I call it.
An e-dash mail?
Yeah, I got an e-dash mail from a listener who sent us a commercial that is airing on local radio, or at least a local radio station's podcast feed, for whatever that's worth. And they think it might be an AI actor or an AI voice.
Mm.
And so you and I get to get out our judges. Hammers and listen to this.
Is there an answer to this riddle, or is it just a subjective opinion?
I think I've made it clear that whatever I say is the final answer. What part of this don't you understand? All right, no, it's just an interesting piece of tape sent in by listener Bruce that I want to examine along with you. But no, I don't have any definitive answers. But I think you're going to enjoy it because Bruce says there are two specific words in this commercial that are tells.
Mm-hmm.
I only picked up on one, but I'm like, oh, yeah, that is.
I will tell you that I think it was the New York Times maybe a few months ago showed like a slideshow. It was like a quiz. And the way to get me to click on your New York Times article is give me some sort of quiz.
Because you want to get an A.
I love getting A's and I love quizzes. And it was like, can you decipher, can you guess which of these 20 pictures we're going to show you?
Yeah.
Some were of people's faces.
All faces, yeah.
Which ones are real people, which ones are AI generated. And I did extremely well on the quiz.
Well, congratulations. So
So I'm very good at this.
You'll be well prepared to help us get to the bottom of this. So I am excited to share that with you. But let's start by talking about Jerry Seinfeld. I'm a Clune. I didn't know that the English Beat did a cover of that song. I like it, though.
I really like it, yeah. I mean, I'm not usually like, give me some more of that sweet, sweet ska.
No, you're not.
But that one actually works for me. It's
yeah, it works well in this context because Jerry Seinfeld is sad because you can't be funny on TV anymore because
like,
of the, what does he say, the extreme left.
The extreme left and the PC crap. I would say sad is not the right description. He's dyspeptic.
Oh, my God.
And like all cranky old men, dyspepsia, he wears it, I guess, well.
I have heard a lot of men, not all white men, I will say that.
Hashtag.
Not all white men, no. It's almost always men, with the exception of like Roseanne Barr, I guess.
Oh, I saw the best, what do you call them on... what's,
oh, is this an Instagram thing? Is
it
a story? Is it a real?
It's a thread thing. Okay. I will say, good job, Instagram, on getting me to look at threads by inserting them into my Instagram feed.
Because it makes me avoid them even more.
Really?
I would go to threads more if I didn't feel so manipulated.
Well,
by Zuckerberg.
I've been beaten into submission. One of the things I saw in threads was someone who said, I think it's a really good rule that as I think about Joe Rogan, I'm reminded of the rule that anything only men like is not cool. And then he further retweeted on it. I didn't expect this to blow up, so let me clarify. I am 100% right. And I was like, yeah, I agree.
Are there examples of things only men like?
Well,
like
his example was Joe Rogan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, that's true. There's your, it's right in there. All right. Well, let's talk about this Seinfeld situation here. We're about to play a piece of tape from this New Yorker interview that he did. And we're going to play a big piece of tape, too, because I want everybody to hear the context for it. But I want to start here, and Genevieve, you can set this up better, but essentially Jerry Seinfeld straight up says there's nothing funny on TV anymore because the extreme left. Well, I mean, he literally says, like, back in the day you could watch funny TV after work, and now he says, where's the funny TV? And that's what immediately sparked outrage in me, because I think it's all over the place. There's all and it's not just on TV either. There's all kinds of funny comedy. Platforms have changed, and this is always a bugaboo of mine. I'm always saying this, like, just because old men don't see it where they used to doesn't mean it's not out there. But also, it's on the TV. Where is it? I can point to it.
Yeah, I mean, what we do in the shadows, hacks. Like, yes. There's so much funny television.
Chad. I mean, I know that's not on the air anymore, but it's a modern example of, like, breaking comedy barriers. Where is it?
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, first of all, I think it's important to kind of set the context. This is a wide-ranging, free-flowing conversation between Jerry Seinfeld and David Remnick. They're very comfortable with each other. They like each other. They kind of, you know, Jerry's giving him a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. But it's a live, unscripted environment. And even a person like Jerry Seinfeld, who's very comfortable on the mic and very capable of speaking extemporaneously, like anybody, can kind of, I think, say something without quite hearing how it's going to resonate or talk himself into a corner. And you can hear that a little bit in this interview.
I don't mind people being thoughtful in interviews. I just don't think he ever ends up like kind of taking back some straight up false things that he says.
Well, they're his opinions. Yeah. It's not so much that I think it's the idea that sometimes we start talking or we get on a tear or a rant and we end up saying something that if we were sitting down writing it, we wouldn't write it that way. So all that is to say, he does say something that I think is demonstrably ridiculous, that there's not funny TV out there right now, and that it's because of the humorlessness and the ultra carefulness of PC, and I use that term sort of in scare quotes, of culture. And he seems to be thinking about it more in terms of like the network culture of over network executives overthinking sensitivities when they're giving notes. And it's like, I mean, creators have always complained.
He doesn't know that there are more networks than just ABC, NBC, and CBS anymore.
It does feel like
In that case, I'm kind of with him. If those are his only sources of television, then I guess I do struggle
Some
to maybe point out the
hard.
Funny.
but I also think that if you listen to this chunk of tape that we're going to play, almost without meaning to, he never repudiates what he says or recants, but he comes around to a thoughtful conclusion almost by accident and says the thing that you and I always say about comedy and whether or not you can be funny anymore, which is that, yes, of course you can be funny. The challenge always in being funny is being funny within constraints. Whatever those cultural constraints are and whatever like modern sensibilities are. And that's always an evolving and moving target. And he ironically, without meaning to or without stating it, he gets to that point. And I do think it's a little bit of a shame that the clickbaity headlines about this thing he popped off on don't then talk a little bit more about this more thoughtful realization or insight that he has. So we're going to play the whole thing.
Yeah. All right, let's play the whole thing, and then I'll react to the tape and what you just said.
It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap. And people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to see stand-up comics because we are not policed by anyone. The audience polices us. We know when we're off track. Mm-hmm. We know instantly, and we adjust to it instantly. But when you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy.
Have you had that experience?
No.
Because isn't that what Curb is all about?
Larry was grandfathered in. He's old enough that I don't have to observe those rules because I started before you made those rules. We did an episode of the series in the 90s where Kramer decides to start a business of having homeless pull rickshaws because, as he says, they're outside anyway.
Mm-hmm. What about the homeless?
Can't we worry about them later?
To pull the rickshaw.
They do have an intimate knowledge of the street.
Always walking around the city. Why not just strap something to them?
Now that's the first sensible idea I've heard all day. Do you think I could get that episode on the air today?
But you think Larry got grandfathered in, and there could be no 35-year-old version.
Right. If Larry was 35, he couldn't get away with his, like, the watermelon stuff and Palestinian chicken and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And HBO knows that's what people come here for. But they're not smart enough or to figure out, how do we do this now? Do we take the heat, you know, or just not be funny? We would write a different joke with Kramer and the rickshaw today. We wouldn't do that joke. We'd come up with another joke. They move the gates like in the skiing.
Yeah.
Culture, the gates are moving. Your job is to be agile and clever enough that wherever they put the gates, I'm going to make the gate.
See, I'm almost more mad after listening to that at David Remnick than Seinfeld for not stopping there and saying, well, then doesn't that negate what you started saying?
About
that
you how
you're
not
funny anymore.
How you can't be funny anymore. And I'm annoyed at David Remnick for not saying, you don't think that what we do in the shadows is funny and transgressive and hilarious. You don't think, you know, there are so... You know, maybe we aren't in a golden age of the sitcom right now, like that's for many reasons, but I don't think it's because comedy has been policed to death.
And also, I just think there's so much his argument, which is, I think, very much based on him being a person of a certain standing in a certain generation, is knee-jerky, but then he points to things to support his argument that are just simply false. Like the idea that stand-up comedy isn't ever controversial, or like, have you been watching the Dave Chappelle shit show? Like, yes, people are holding people accountable at network level.
Sort of. I mean, Dave Chappelle keeps getting Netflix specials.
But that's kind of what I mean. Like, it is playing out. And so there is, I think maybe I'm being a Seinfeld here, but like, you did have a mass movement of people at Netflix who spoke up on that.
Yeah.
And then they didn't end up getting it boycotted, but they tried to. And it is an ongoing conversation. It's just like, I don't think that it's necessarily either or. And Jerry is basically saying, at least he begins by saying, and I believe that if you wake him up in the middle of the night, he won't realize that he kind of backtracked on his own argument, and he will continue to say, you can't be funny anymore. I think that is his thesis, and he will go to the grave with it.
I guess so. I think, like, he thinks you can be funny. He goes on to name a bunch of comedians that he likes. I feel like they were definitely all men and probably all white.
And Shane Gillis was probably in there.
I didn't hear his name, fortunately. But look, yeah, he's not a super progressive person. He's an old man. The most hilarious part of that interview, which we didn't play, is when he says, I think quite unironically, that he hates performing. He doesn't like old audiences, old people as audiences. And it's like, and I mean, they even, and that's one time when Remnick says, but you're 70 years old. And he says, basically, like, I don't care. I want young audiences. And I think that actually, if anything, that's where his dyspepsia originates, is that he is ageist. And doesn't like old people, and like all of culture associates anything that old people like with being not cool. And because he is not cool, because he is also himself old, he feels very angry that his appeal has become limited to these people that he already holds an ageist bigotry or prejudice against.
But those are the people who are going to find his comedy the most funny, because he's speaking to their values.
I think it comes from personal grievance that he's dressing up as cultural critique.
It's also somewhat interesting. We should get into the commercial side of this as soon as possible. But it's also interesting because his character on the show, but his persona has never been to be cool. He's always been a square.
Yeah.
It's going to come up in a little bit when we're talking about the American Express commercials. I was actually thinking about that, not in relation to this conversation as we're having it now, but just like how his hero was Superman, like on the show and I kind of in this American Express commercial, and I think probably in real life. What does he love? Cereal and Superman.
Yeah.
He was never the hipster, you know?
It's true. Yeah. He was never, he was always like the clean comic and the square comic. So all of that is to say, he's sort of, and the reason he was doing this art, this radio art to begin with, was really to promote this movie that he's written and directed called Unfrosted.
Which I'm still interested in seeing, by the way.
I actually am too. Mm-hmm. It's a funny premise. The premise that it's like basically if you took the right stuff, you know, the race to the moon, like a technology race. If you took that premise but applied it to the race to create a breakfast pastry, a toaster pastry, and you said Post and General Mills are like the Russians and the Americans, and you gave it the same seriousness and life or death vibes, but it was something so trivial and silly. I think that's a funny premise.
Sure. Yeah.
As I said, what came to my attention in terms of advertising around this was this promo that he did. And it's true that when they made this movie, they didn't consult either of the breakfast, like either Post or General Mills or whatever conglomerate now owns those companies. They just kind of went ahead and wrote it and did it. But in the especially in a post Barbie world, I think General, is it Post or General Mills that makes Pop-Tarts?
I'm not sure, but I'm interested to learn this because I Kellogg's, assumed I guess. That it was I assume that this was sort of a Barbie Mattel style partnership or like a Mattel, you know, Hollywood partnership like the Barbie movie was. And I didn't realize that Pop-Tarts really did have nothing to do with this. But now they're jumping on
now
it.
Now they're jumping on
and
it.
And leveraging it. Yeah. And so that's good for everybody involved in that particular
deal. Yeah, luckily
deal.
They get the joke and they're like, you know, they're very well aware that it's like just, it's all fun, all tongue-in-cheek and all funny. So now, like sort of in partnership with Kellogg's, he made this promo where someone playing the CEO of Kellogg's kind of hauls him before this, you know, committee of people, one of which is a Pop-Tart mascot, like that they call Tardy.
Yeah, because that Tardy, we've talked about Tardy on this show before, because there's a one of the college bowl games, one of the football bowl
right.
games feature is sponsored by Pop-Tarts now, and Tardy was like just a scene stealer in the bowl season this year because the mascot was running around, and then I think I even played tape for you of Tardy messing with a reporter in some way and saying that it likes to be eaten by reporters. And then at some point at halftime, I think there was a whole spectacle where they put the Pop-Tart mascot into a giant toaster.
Right.
And then at the post-game conference or whatever, people were eating what was supposedly the mascot. I mean, that's some next level shit. I'm way into it.
Yeah. So clearly Pop-Tarts and Kellogg's is like having a lot of fun with their image. So the premise of this, this promo, which I guess it is for the movie, Jerry's brought in, kind of called on the carpet, and he's typical Jerry Seinfeld, where this was always a very fun part of Seinfeld, the show, too, where everyone around him would be acting like something was life or death, and he would just be completely blasé about it.
Yes,
so it's same thing here. He's like, this guy's trying to like really beat a top play. Be the heavy with him, and he's just like, whatever, I don't care.
While he's like kind of feet on the table in the conference room,
but
eating their Pop-Tarts.
They do eventually break his cool demeanor.
And this promo begins with a all-black screen with small white text that says, when Jerry Seinfeld made the movie Unfrosted, he referenced 221 trademarked breakfast products without permission or proper legal clearances. And then it says, this prompted a meeting.
Mr. Seinfeld, I'm Kelman P. Gasworth, the president of Pop-Tarts.
I just made a whole movie about Pop-Tarts.
Did you now? Well, isn't that something? Do you think maybe that's why you're here?
Beats me.
It's my understanding that you neither sought nor received permission to use our product in your movie.
Yeah, that's Tardy, the huge Pop-Tart mascot.
Why is it that
leaning over like a lawyer whispering in the ear?
Why is it that when a mascot with its pasted on smile acts menacing, it's so hilarious?
What is that?
What Tardy is asking is, are you familiar with the concept of trademark infringement?
That sounds complicated.
Actually, it's quite simple. You see, Mr. Seinfeld, you took something of ours. And now, we're going to take something of yours.
I just want to point out, I love that he calls him Seinfeld.
Yeah, most famous.
Like, this is
It's not even spelled Seinfeld.
This is really funny. I don't know if Jerry Seinfeld helped write this or not, but it's really funny. In the room is a some sort of large square object that is covered with, like, a blue curtain. We can't see what's inside, but they're about to reveal it.
Show him, Tardy.
Whoopi, Jackie Chan's the soup Nazi. My characters.
Okay, I need your help here. So it's a big see-through, like, plexiglass box. And
right.
We see three characters from the Seinfeld universe. I only recognize the soup Nazi.
And Jackie Childs. He was their gloss on, you know, Johnny Cochran.
Oh, okay. He said it so quickly, and the shot is actually kind of quick. Okay, yeah, I do remember him. He rhymes all the time. Like,
yes, he's there. He's the the Johnny Cochran, like, you know, sort
stand-in.
Of character stand-in. And then Shmoopy is a blonde woman, and she's from the episode where she and Jerry are, I think it's her and Jerry, are a couple, and they're very like, oh, you're my schmoopy
and
it makes everybody else physically ill.
Too much PDA.
Yeah.
Okay, so here it is. We're revealing that the Pop-Tarts has now boxed up his characters.
Schmoopy, Jackie Chaz, the Soup Nazi. My characters.
They're my characters now, Mr. Seinfeld. Tell me, how does it feel when people steal your ideas and then do whatever they want with them?
You mean like Friends?
Take a gander at this. Our new show. People in Pontiacs eating Pop-Tarts.
So we're going to see the CEO himself in... along with, I guess, one of the other people who's on his board or whatever, and then Tardy in the back seat. They're driving around in some sort of convertible Pontiac eating Pop-Tarts.
I picked this Pontiac for you because I thought you'd like it.
And there's some sort of an accident.
I think that's a little reference because he stops short and the...
just stop short.
And the Pop-Tardy sort of falls forward and puts his hand... a little bit on the passenger's breast.
Yeah. Of course, Genevieve, I don't know if you know this, you can't be that edgy these days, so it looks like Tardy's hand is just on her shoulder.
Oh, just her shoulder.
Yes,
okay,
yeah. I'm sure
the extreme left had a hand in changing that.
Had a hand in it, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, so to speak.
Well, I gotta get going. I got a show tonight.
No, you don't. You're not a comedian anymore. I am. Why is
okay,
Frank...
so now...
now we open in basically your basic comedy club.
Brick wall.
Spotlight on a brick wall. The CEO, Gasworth, or whatever his name is standing in front of this brick wall, you know, doing his session or his routine. And when we cut to the audience, we see that Jerry's the only person in the room, so there's no one to respond to his jokes, which I honestly think his material's pretty funny.
No, you don't. You're not a comedian anymore. I am. Why is Frankenstein wearing a sport jacket? It's not a wine tasting. We're terrorizing villagers.
It's a tough business.
Oh, I guess he's not the only... I guess it isn't
that
he's the only
people
in the room. I just couldn't see them when I looked at it earlier.
Is there a button here that I missed also at the very end? We see Seinfeld sitting in
oh, there is, yeah.
In the boardroom, and he's looks like he's talking to Tardy.
This make you uncomfortable? I'll step out.
He's eating a Pop-Tart, and he asks Tardy, does this make you uncomfortable? And Tardy, nods.
Huh, at the end, at the end, you see the big Netflix symbol. So I'm a little, I think that that's just a joint production.
It's a cross promo.
It's pretty great, though.
I like it. I think that the whole thing works. I don't know if Jerry Seinfeld wrote it, but it is very funny. If Mr. Seinfeld wrote it. Again, we sort of opened this show by, criticizing Jerry Seinfeld for being out of touch and too quick to blame the culture for the inevitable product of aging out of the culture. That said, I loved Seinfeld. It is still to me at my, in my middle age, it is still to me a funny show. And I still think Jerry Seinfeld is a funny guy, and a talented comedian. I just wish that he could step back from his own I think that there are fair critiques of the left that you can make, but the idea that that they've killed television comedy is just so, it's so weak.
It is. It's very, very weak. And again,
I honestly think he's better than that.
This is not the first time he said this.
No.
I have had kind of a bad taste in my mouth about modern Jerry Seinfeld for years now, because this kind of popped up, I don't know how many years ago? Not that many. A few years ago, there was some quote from him saying I could never do college campuses anymore.
Yeah,
and that kind of goes back to him wanting to appeal to young people, but then not acknowledging the new values of young people. Yeah, and also, would he do a college campus? But just saying, I would never do it. You can't be funny anymore. It's again, like you said, your audience is deciding, and I guess that's not your audience for you then.
I mean, Jean Smart is 72 years old. She's older than Jerry Seinfeld, and she's killing it, in part because...
Wait, on college campuses?
I don't know if she's on college campus. If she's doing stand-up, she's a comedic actress, but she's the star of Hacks.
Oh, okay.
And it's just so ironic that one of the funniest shows on television right now is about a boomer comedian, literally a boomer stand-up comedian, who revitalizes her career because she leans into the fact that a young person, a millennial, might have something to teach her.
Well, let's go back a ways and talk about some of these other commercials. And it's funny that almost all of the commercials from the Pop-Tarts thing we just played to these commercials for Microsoft, that which you and I have talked about for years, really liking, and they're weird.
Yeah.
They star both Seinfeld and Bill Gates. And these are also long form, kind of like probably early internet age viral-ish videos, right? I think some shortened versions of these did air on TV, but these that we're going to play here are, again, kind of long form.
Yeah, so I had actually just started working for Microsoft's communications contractor, so I wasn't a direct employee of Microsoft, but I essentially was working for Microsoft at the time when these came out. And I really liked them. I have just revisited them for this show, and I still like them. I think they've got a lot to recommend them. I can understand how they didn't do a lot to advance Microsoft's brand, but I think that the vitriol, because they were just roundly just ridiculed and lambasted.
That's such a bummer. These are
immediately
good.
As a total debacle for the brand and for the
internally they were lambasted. Or you mean even in the press?
I mean, everybody hated it. It was just like,
oh really?
It was
I didn't know that.
From moment one, everyone just agreed, like, what a terrible mistake this was.
Oh, I disagree.
And I've always felt like they should have stuck it. Microsoft sometimes suffers, I think, in their communication style and strategy from they don't have the courage of their convictions and they back off of things too quickly. And, like, you know, say what you want about Elon Musk, and I would say do say what you want about him because he seems like a real piece of shit.
But just don't say it on his social media platform because he'll kick you off of it.
He will kick you off of X, and I say X because, you know what? I think it was the dumbest thing ever to rename Twitter X, but you stand by something long enough and eventually you get your way. If you keep communicating like this is the thing, this is the thing, you know, this is the brand. I think it's a stupid brand, but it's not going to be Twitter anymore. It's X.
I do think it's interesting, like, the bylines, and this is probably just laziness on the part of, like, newspapers, and that it's just, like, boilerplate so they don't even realize it. But, like, at the bottom of the Seattle Times articles, it still says, you know, follow this reporter on Twitter.
And so
it's
many.
Like, it's been a long time. I mean, it's been a while now, and I understand the... But you should at least update it to say X, formerly Twitter, or Slash, or something like that. They're
people
just
know it's X now.
It.
Yeah, like like it or hate it, that's the name of the product. Anyway, so anyway, all that is to say, I think Microsoft is too quick to step back from something that is perceived or gets a little bit of negative press or whatever. They're kind of thin-skinned in that way, or they have been historically. I don't know. It's been 20 years since I worked for them, but so. If you don't remember this or were too young to remember this, I don't know if we have a lot of young people listening to our show either.
So. Hi, Gus.
Jerry Seinfeld, who was still probably at the peak of his powers, I think, at that time. This would have been kind of in the aughts, late aughts. And Bill Gates, obviously, was still... I think at least the chairman of Microsoft, maybe not still the CEO, maybe still even the CEO.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so it was like they were both at the peak of their powers. They do these series of ads where the first one is kind of an establishing ad where Jerry Seinfeld meets Bill Gates in a discount shoe store in a mall. And all of this is like putting these two incredibly rich, incredibly famous, and known to be somewhat eccentric guys into a context that is like very like middle America, normal middle class life, and like the joke of that being like how disconnected they are from that, or in some ways how weirdly connected they are, like Bill Gates being a super saver at this shoe store.
Right, yeah. And some of this is going to be visual, but I think the audience can just kind of follow along. And it's a lot of awkward conversation, if I recall. I haven't seen this in years.
Yeah, they're both also famously kind of
awkward
guys.
They're both famously awkward. I think there's a lot of, like, I remember, we'll see if I'm right, but I think I remember liking the way they leave a lot of space in here and sort of let things breathe in an awkward way.
I almost think you wait 10 years to make these ads. Of course, they're both in a different point in their careers, but I almost feel like they were ahead of their time.
Yeah.
So Jerry Seinfeld's walking through a mall. We'll just set this first one up.
Okay, before you set it up, I just want to say, if you are curious about specifically what era this was, the video I'm about to play for you, you can see the actual TiVo monitor at the bottom of the screen. And I'm not saying that, like, as a catch-all for DVR.
Like, I mean, literal TiVo.
This was uploaded from somebody's actual TiVo.
Yes.
Yes.
So we start with Jerry Seinfeld just casually walking through a mall, eating a churro, and he happens to walk past a shoe store in the mall. It's like Shoe Circus. And getting fitted in there is Bill Gates. And he goes in, and then we have a montage of Jerry sort of deciding that he's going to help Bill Gates pick out these shoes and almost taking over for the shoe salesperson.
Shoe Circus quality shoes at discount prices. Why pay more? Bill Gates?
Jerry Seinfeld?
Churro?
I'm good. The left one's a little tight.
They'll stretch.
You sure they'll stretch? Is that your toe?
No.
What is it?
Leather.
Yeah, see, that's the moment. I mean, our audience can't see it, but like he says leather. But then Bill Gates, like in an accomplishment of acting, gives this weird like grin as if he said something a little bit risque.
Yes.
And it makes no sense. And it's hilarious.
It makes no sense, but there's an absurdist quality to it that I feel like people just didn't appreciate how good it was.
Yeah.
You know, don't you feel like in a post-Tim and Eric world, this is actually kind of good?
Leather.
He's a conquistador. They run very tight. You get the other one. You know what I do? I wear them in the shower. Ever wear clothes in the shower, Bill?
Never.
You're dressed, and you're clean. Open the door, go about your business. He's a 10.
10.
See how that feels.
Better.
That's a 10.
Es el conquistador.
He's,
guess what,
just randomly, there's a Latino family outside the shoe store looking through the glass at Bill Gates walking around in the conquistador leather shoe. And the wife says, it's the conquistador.
You're a 10.
Ellos van apretados.
Are you a Shoe Circus Clown Club member?
Platinum.
Okay, that's another good. He holds up his like little membership card for the Shoe Circus Clown Club, and it's the famous photo of him as a very young man when he started Microsoft, kind of shaggy hair.
That's how long he's been a Shoe Circus
glasses.
Member.
Yeah.
What do you get with that card?
Big top points.
You know, I imagine over the years you've mind-melded your Magnum Jupiter brain to those other Saturn ring brains at Microsoft.
I have.
Just wondering, are they ever going to come out with something that'll make our computers moist and chewy like cake so we could just eat them while we're working? If it's yes, give me a signal. Adjust your shorts.
He says, if it's yes, just give me a signal, adjust your shorts. And we see them walking through the parking lot towards a car. And Bill Gates just does this very awkward, and we're seeing him from behind, a very awkward little butt wiggle.
Yeah, he like shimmies a little bit to adjust his shorts, and Seinfeld's like, oh, I knew it.
I like the way that, you know, Bill Gates and the creators of this know that Bill Gates is not, I mean, I was going to say not the actor here, neither Jerry Seinfeld, not really known for his acting either. But like knowing that he just plays a straight man, just say like, what do you get with that card? Big top points. And I love it.
Yeah.
Just matter of fact.
I think
well
they do
done.
A good job within his acting limitations, which obviously he is not. That's not his skill set.
Yeah. You're talking about Jerry.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness to both of them.
All right. Now, these other ones in the series, I don't know that I've seen.
I've seen them. It's been a while. So they actually did go ahead and film two more or sort of one extended little vignette with a family in the suburbs. We get a whole taste of this family's life. It's a mother, a father, a teenage daughter, and a son. And I will also note that although I don't recognize many of the actors in this family, the husband is an actor who's pretty well known to me, although he wouldn't have been at the time.
He looks really familiar to me.
Yeah, his name is David Costabile. You would know him from Breaking Bad. He's Gail Bedecker, the other chemist.
Oh, Gail. Yes,
he's
Gail.
Also in Billions. I've never watched that show, but I think he's like a tertiary character in Billions.
Yeah, okay, great.
He's in Flight of the Conchords as the extremely dominated husband of Kristen Schaal.
Okay.
So he's been in a lot. And he's just one of those actors who, he's a that guy for me. Like, I love to see David Costello when he shows up.
Okay. So they're sitting here. This begins at the dinner table with the family that you mentioned, along with Bill Gates and Jerry Seinfeld for some reason.
They're just sitting they've just decided to live with this family to, like, get a taste of normal middle-class life.
All right, let's take a listen.
You know that car's still in their driveway.
I know.
Are you going to talk to them about it? Does it even run?
Oh, it's his car. It's his driveway. It's none of my business.
There's weeds growing around the tires.
Do we have any more ketchup?
You're in my seat, funny man.
Didn't we have this yesterday?
Oh.
There's some cheese on it. Why are we doing this again?
Why, Bill? Because as we discussed, you and I are a little out of it.
Okay, so first of all, that's very meta. We're now in some child's bedroom. It's after dinner, supposedly.
Clearly like a teenage girl or like a tween girl's bedroom. Very pink and like, you know, four-poster, you know, it's a very girly bedroom.
And it's just the two of them now, and it's Bill Gates saying, why are we doing this again? Why are we hanging out with this normcore family?
Hi, Bill. Because as we discussed, you and I are a little out of it. You're living in some kind of moon house hovering over Seattle like the mothership. I got so many cars, I get stuck in my own traffic.
I just noticed that while they're talking, like, Jerry Seinfeld has a ball, he's bouncing off the wall. And what is Bill Gates doing? He has a callback to the first video. He's still stretching out the shoes
the way
Jerry taught him to in the shoe store. That's pretty funny. And as you said to me off air, Genevieve, just to really underscore it here, like, here is Jerry Seinfeld saying, we're not relatable.
Yeah.
We're out of touch with society, yes, basically. And this was years ago. You are.
We need to connect with real people.
Who took my teeth out of the freezer?
That's real.
I felt that.
They're playing, there's a rumpus room scene. Is this just going to be a fast montage?
It's going to be a fast montage. Okay, it's them playing ping pong with the family and kind of arguing about points. It's they order takeout Chinese and the delivery kid is like, whoa, when Seinfeld and Gates open the door.
Ow. Sorry.
Chinese delivery.
The fact that a design uses inheritance and polymorphism doesn't make it a good design. Real object.
Jerry, I've got $1,800 in my own account. What would you do with it?
You know, I really don't want to get into financial things. It's a little uncomfortable. I just want to live with you people.
Ew! So he's clipping his toenails in this little girl's bedroom where she's clearly been ousted in favor of letting Jerry Seinfeld sleep in her room, and she pops her head in and sees him cutting his toenails on her bed.
And then she screams, ew, and gets out of there. There was some whispering. Again, I don't know how much you're going to be able to actually hear this on just the podcast, but like, it looks like Jerry is brushing his teeth kind of in the hallway, passing the mom, and she's asking for financial advice. And he says, I don't want to get into financial stuff. I just want to live with you people, which is pretty funny. So I'm going to skip to this
part. It's getting a little testy in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, it was right here. That leather giraffe that we got from Cabo San Lucas.
I didn't take it.
Me neither.
Well, I mean, that just leaves Gates and Seinfeld.
And then it says to be continued. So there's a missing toy leather giraffe.
A leather giraffe that they got in Cabo San Lucas.
Okay, so let me play. So that was part one of this. And then it says to be continued. And now...
And the continuation will like recap the main beats of that story and open on them being accused of taking that leather giraffe.
It was right there, the leather giraffe that we got from Cabo San Lucas.
Are you accusing us?
This is not a good feeling.
They pinched it.
Well, if you want to search our rooms, go ahead, because we didn't take it. I have never seen that giraffe before in my life. It's your backpack.
It's your bed.
I'm disappointed in the both of you.
You guys are so dead.
I can't believe you did that.
Oh, how naive are you? Can't you?
Now they're being punished, I suppose. Is that why
they're having to sand down a door outside as their punishment?
Oh, how naive are you? Can't you see the whole thing was a setup?
But who? Why?
Oh, clearly the kids set these guys up.
We know it was you.
Why?
Ew! Grotesque! Hello, lamos. I just want my room back.
Well, you got it, sister.
You're not so real.
Yep, I'm Echo.
Actually, watching Bill Gates kind of get like nasty with a tween is pretty funny. Now, is this the old lady? She's working under the car.
Yeah, there's a sassy grandma.
You keep on hearing her in the background. Yeah.
Head gasket.
I think we connected with them
in a way.
Bill, you've connected over a billion people.
I have.
I can't help wondering what's next. Frog with an email, goldfish with a website, amoeba with a blog. If it's yes, give me a sign. Give me a little robot.
So then Bill Gates does the world's worst rendition of the robot.
All right, power up. Let's go.
And then he picks up, and I love the little hop he gives as he picks up his rolly bag, and they walk down the street looking for another house to live in.
I think those were fun. I think
they were so fun, and I just think, like, you know, Jerry and Bill, you're not going to get them for every mm-hmm. ad that you do, and you know, they're obviously, even within Microsoft, there's a limit to how much of their time and how much budget you can assign to that. But
because there's not a lot of, like, actually sales pitches in there either. It's really hard to say how that connects back to Microsoft.
Yeah, it was a brand sort of – it was almost like they were starting to do some kind of rebrand a little bit, just what their brand identity is. And then, like I say, they were chased off of it so instantly. And I just think it would be an interesting world if Microsoft – if their ads for consumers weren't just this – like, they're so boring now. Mm-hmm. It's like – oh, you know, they're just so earnest and predictable and basic.
Yeah. So if that was the early 2000s, I'm pretty sure the next commercials that I threw on the list here, which I don't think we actually even have to listen to because they're kind of like those we just heard. These are very visual, and we're running a little bit long here. But Jerry Seinfeld, I want to say, like, maybe in the late 90s and early 2000s, maybe even overlapping with those, did a bunch of commercials for American Express.
Right. He was kind of the pitch man for a while. Yeah. Along with the voice of David Putty.
Yeah, well, the voice of David Putty appears in one of them, in which he plays the voice of Superman.
Right.
When you see Jerry Seinfeld in Superman, that's the only one that sort of, maybe I'll play that one. We've played it on the show before. That might have even been a Super Bowl version.
Patrick Warburton. I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah. But there's one where Jerry Seinfeld's at a gas station, and there's like little bits of his observational humor are what kind of are the backbone of them. So at the gas station, it's like, can he, like, kind of pump his gas? I mean, these commercials are so old. The gas station meter is actually still a physical, like, wheel that is clicking the numbers over.
Wild.
And it's like, it's this whole thing. Can Jerry, while everybody is watching, stop the pump at exactly $20? Which he does, but then goes over by 37 cents anyway.
But it doesn't matter,
presumably,
because
you're paying with a credit card.
You're paying with a credit card. You didn't have to go in and give a $20 bill to the clerk.
Very interesting that, like, these feel so, they don't feel that old to me, but they're literally just advertising a credit card over cash.
Yeah.
Like, in this day and age,
now it's like,
I can't get people to take my cash.
Well, I know. There's that. And now it's like credit card versus credit card, which is like, our credit card gives you 100 airline miles for every dollar you spend.
You get more big top points with our credit card than anybody else's.
In a way, yes.
There's another one where he's in a grocery store and there's like a bunch of little, it's like very quick montages of him going through the grocery store, and like he kind of like really owns that grocery store space. He's whizzing by on a grocery cart while other people have carts with bad wheels on them, that old trope, or some guy not being able to open up his produce plastic bag, you know, how they kind of stick together, whatever.
All this
while
minutia
Jerry
of life
comes,
that
exactly.
is very Seinfeldian.
I will say, and again, while I continue to pile on as a member of the woke mafia, you know, I think the grocery store one is also very telling. It's like all the women in it, there are several women, and they're all like stylized exactly like the kind of hotties of the Seinfeld era. Like, they're all like these. I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah, but we all know
careful.
What all the women on Seinfeld
exactly
look like.
Kind of overly attractive, but all of a type, white women who are like, ooh, Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And since you mentioned it, I'll play this one. I think, is this a 1 minute version? No, this is just a 30-second version of Jerry Seinfeld walking down. This one says it's from 1998, if we can believe YouTube, which. Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
That's why I don't take vaccines. But Jerry Seinfeld is walking down the street with a true animated Superman. Imagine what would be a modern reference? Roger Rabbit style.
If you will.
If you will. But he's walking with a Superman who is voiced by Putty, and I will only call him Putty. they see somebody who's having trouble paying for something in a store. Now, they're not in the store. They're walking down the street, but they can see the woman inside this building.
You sign a lot of autographs?
Oh, yeah, you?
Some. They asked me to bend stuff a lot.
I can see that. What?
It's Lois. She's in trouble.
Did you look through that building?
Well, kind of. It's glass.
Lois. Okay, so we see a woman playing Lois Lane, and she looks a little distressed at the cash register as she's trying to buy something.
Lois!
Superman, I've forgotten my wallet.
I can't carry money in this. I'm powerless.
I'm not.
My hero.
You can do more with the American Express.
So she can't pay for anything because she doesn't have her cash or cards or whatever. Superman points to his underwear. He's like, I don't have any. I can't carry anything in this. So then Jerry Seinfeld spins around very quickly for reasons.
For comic book reasons,
and whips out his American Express. And then I do wonder, is she going to pay him? Is she going to Venmo him back?
I think Jerry's happy to have Lois Lane owe him a favor.
This is true.
Obviously some sort of make-a-wish for Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes. Yeah, he gets to actually be on screen with Superman. There's a little button at the end here. We heard at the very beginning Superman say, no, I'm not asked for autographs that much, but people ask me to bend stuff. At the very end, somebody walks up to him on the street with a metal rod.
Could you? For my kid.
The guy says, could you bend this? It's for my kid. Okay, so that was his American Express era. What else do you have on here?
I found two Super Bowl ads that Jerry Seinfeld did, which I was not aware of. Now, they are pretty old. I think they're like in the neighborhood of 10 or 11 years old.
No, we definitely talked about... This was, I think, when our show was very new, or was this right before we launched our show? This was the 2014 one where he and George get back together.
Did we talk about this? It's just been so long.
You know what? There's a chance that after these messages didn't exist yet, and maybe Luke and I just talked about this.
It.
But this was definitely a commercial because I have a nit to pick with this commercial.
Okay,
actually.
Well, that's great. That's what this is for.
But why don't you set it up?
All right, so we have. This is the Super Bowl year. Actually, the Seahawks were in it that year, I believe, right?
Oh, okay.
It was the
yeah.
Seahawks and the I can't remember, but the Super Bowl is taking place in New York City.
Well, that would have been Denver, right?
I don't remember.
Seahawks, Denver. We beat Denver, but then we lost to the Patriots. But when I say we, I mean I was on the Seahawks at the time. yeah, you know, the more you talk about the context of this, I realize we might not have been doing a show yet.
Yeah, I don't think we were.
Wow.
So it's the Super Bowl's in New York. You've got, and obviously Seinfeld, very New York show. You've got Jerry Seinfeld and Jason Alexander, but clearly they are, at least Jason Alexander is very much in character as George. He's mm-hmm. dressed as George. He is acting like George. And I think they may even address him as George in this. And of course, Jerry is so, because he's a person named Jerry Seinfeld and also a character named Jerry Seinfeld. So he like kind of exists in both spaces, right? Mm-hmm. They drive into New York. They pass the diner the famous Seinfeld diner, and they go in and they sit down at a booth and they start talking about how they don't have anywhere else to be for the Super Bowl. So they're watching it. So they're together. But Jerry kind of slips and mumbles something about how he actually did have an invite, but George wasn't included.
The reason I was confused about this commercial is because it seemed like they're driving to watch the Super Bowl. And then the next thing you know, they're sitting in the diner talking about why there weren't chips or something. I was very confused about the timeline here. Are they getting ready to watch the Super Bowl together, or are they talking about a Super Bowl they just missed? Then he starts talking about the Super Bowl from a year prior when George got into some trouble.
Right. I think the way it's positioned, the Super Bowl, this is halftime.
Ah, so at halftime they leave and they go to the diner, like you do.
As you do.
Can't believe the Super Bowl is in New York.
Well, they gotta have it somewhere.
All right, what's going on here? I come over for the Super Bowl, you don't put out a chip?
It's just the two of us.
Well, unfortunately, we didn't get invited to another party.
Yeah, that's what happened. No, I got invited to anything.
What was that?
Nothing.
You mumbled something.
If I wanted to tell you, I would say it. That's the point of the mumble.
I know the point of the mumble.
I got invited to the Wassersteins.
So? We could have both gone again.
The Wassersteins don't like you because 2 years ago, you overcheered and you ruined the whole party.
It was the Giants. What was I supposed to do? I cheered.
The constant pounding on the coffee table. Pounding, pounding, pounding.
Was there anything else?
Yes. You availed yourself of the toilet in their master bedroom.
You know why.
Well, I know why. Everyone knew why. But you don't do it.
So you didn't go because of me.
That's right.
But you didn't tell me.
I mumbled it.
Right. That's a direct, the bathroom thing is a direct reference to a Seinfeld, the buffer, right? Isn't that what he calls it? He needs a bathroom with a buffer?
I think so, yes. That actually happened to me at a holiday party held by a boss. I won't specify which boss. But I similarly had a situation that I needed a buffer for. And
You didn't get caught, though.
I didn't get caught.
Nice.
Thank God.
Nicely done.
All right, go watch the second half with the Wassersteins.
Seriously?
Get out of here.
All right, I'm going.
Now,
Newman shows
Newman
up.
Newman.
Hello, Jerry. The Wassersteins went a bit savory this year, so I had to make a quick Danish run.
Come on, Seahawks! Come on! Come on, Seahawks!
Newman!
So it's also a cross promo, or is it just a promo for Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee
as a product that is offered on Crackle?
Oh, that's right, it was Crackle.
But so he never says any of those words.
No,
it's just done in text at the end.
But it begins with, I mean, you know, when we started playing this, I forgot that it was a promo for Crackle because I thought it was just sort of an echo. It begins with Jerry and George in the car together, and it's very much, you know, shot like that. And then at the end, we see one of his fancy little cars here, and they're getting in, and it's shot just like Comedians in Cars. And then we see the famous font for that show, and it lists, like, kind of all the people. The Louis C.K., how many of the people, how many of yes. Jerry's friends, you know, like, you just can't say anything. You know what? I'm not going to make that joke.
You know what you just can't do in front of people anymore.
You know what you just can't do anymore.
And so does Louis C.K. at long last.
Again?
The very end, this car won't start, and Jerry sighs, and then you see Jason Alexander for just a second.
Just a second.
He breaks.
Yeah,
I really love. And Jason Alexander... as far as I know, is a good egg.
I think he's a sweetie.
And is just one of my favorite people.
Okay, let's see here. What is this last one?
This one was also completely new to me. Maybe you'll tell me we talked about it, but
doesn't
I think...
Doesn't look familiar to me at all.
This is also a Super Bowl ad. It's very long. It's for the Acura NSX, which is an Acura sports car that is pretty sexy looking. And of course, you know, even before he was doing Comedians in Car, like you've heard so many references in all of this to his car collection, right? Like he's famously a car collector. And this Acura NSX is this new Acura that's going to be released. He's standing in the showroom. He's being told by the sales guy that he is not the first person in line to get the very first NSX. He will have to get the second one. And then what I think is an unprofessional move, the sales guy points out to him the guy who's like sort of a business, like middle-aged white businessman looking guy. He's the guy who is first in line very first one off the lot.
I want it. I would love to have the first one.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Seinfeld, but you're number two on the list.
Who's number one?
That guy.
Okay. So you're number one.
Yeah.
How'd you like to be number 20?
He offers him a $20 bill.
I'll throw in the soup Nazi. Soup for you. I own all the characters.
That's kind of ironic. He appears once again with the soup Nazi.
Soup Nazi's getting more work.
And he says, I own all the characters, which is so funny because...
It's later. I mean, it is like this was however many years ago. It's fun that that was... I don't know whether it was intentional, but I mean, that's very much a callback in this Pop-Tart thing.
And I'll bet you he really does literally own the rights to those characters.
Oh, I'm
also,
sure.
Also, you can always book the soup Nazi. The soup Nazi, I feel like there was a story about him a while back about the guy who plays him. I can't remember exactly what it was, so I'm glad I raised it. But apparently his dance card isn't full.
Yeah.
I own all the characters. Last living munchkin.
I thought he passed away.
I found another one. Dancing holographic monkey?
I have one.
Okay, so I don't know if we've done a good job of explaining this. Obviously, it's a montage. Jerry Seinfeld is intruding on this guy's life in all different scenarios. He shows up in his front yard saying, hey, you can have the soup Nazi if you want. He shows up in his office with, he says, the last living munchkin.
I don't know if that's, I mean, I obviously know what the munchkins are from The Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there's a, if that's a reference to something other than the fact that they would be very elderly by now, because he brings a little person in like a little, like a munchkin mm-hmm. style costume and says, the last living munchkin. And Acura guy says, I thought they all died. And he says, oh, I found one more, which is kind of, it's dark. And I would say you really want to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying little people can't be in comedy. Obviously they can and should. But
making
you just want to be sure that the
wrote,
butt yeah. of the joke isn't that they are a little person.
Sorry, Jerry. You're killing Jerry here, man.
Well, Jerry's killing me.
Okay, so now they're in an elevator. He's got some sort of a...
Oh, he's got like a... It's like a flashlight that he turns on, or a device that he turns on, and a holographic monkey pops out of it. And the for whatever reason, Acura guy also has the same device.
Dancing holographic monkey?
I have one.
I'll make small talk with the omelet guy for you.
Is it like a brunch with an omelet maker?
Did you ever take an egg home with you? Is your head that shape underneath the hat? You ever feel bad about coming out of the toilet and then coming right back to work here? Nobody knows it. You do.
Damn.
Anybody like dirty limericks?
Yams.
Nobody wants any yams, sweetheart.
Okay, so he's now crashing like the family holiday meal. But
doing a type five, I guess.
Yeah, but Jerry's in literally a tuxedo with a microphone doing stand-up.
Damn.
Anybody like dirty limericks?
Yams.
Nobody wants any yams, sweetheart. Beat it. I'm trying to get a roll going.
I'll recap last week's episode of Jersey Gangland for you with sock puppets.
Man, I got these dead. I don't know what now.
Is he still here?
Yes.
Oh, oh, sorry,
now they're in like a some sort of very like enclosed space, and Jerry, and they're dressed like cat burglars, and Jerry Seinfeld opens up a body bag, and there's an alien
there's like
inside.
A classic alien
that's
inside.
Gross, yeah.
It's a very, very quick cut. I think we're in this guy's basement at night, because the guy's in his robe. He's got a glass of milk, and it looks like a basement, and Jerry looks
he's brought this alien corpse.
Jerry's dressed in black, like he had gone to, you know, some sort of
Area 51
and brought this back. It's a very quick flash, and the guy's like, ugh, and then they just end it.
Bad idea.
How
about a new boat?
They're on a boat.
No! Final offer. And for the record, I don't think I like you quite as much as I did at the beginning.
I'm listening.
Access to my personal network of Manhattan ziplines.
Ziplines. They're ziplining to the city.
Wow. Impressive. You've got the first Acura NSX.
How about a jetpack flying squirrel suit? New York to L.A., 20 minutes.
Okay, so then who else loves cars?
Jay Leno. So just as the guy is about to hand Jerry the key to the first Lexus, or the first Acura, excuse me, Jay Leno like zooms in a rocket-powered squirrel, flying squirrel suit, and offers to like jet this guy around on his squirrel suit so that he can get the first Acura.
How about a jetpack flying squirrel suit? New York to L.A., 20 minutes. Sorry, Jerry.
That he does the Newman thing, only he says Leno.
Yeah. And Jerry Seinfeld even says in the Remnick interview that we referenced earlier, and naming comedians that he looks up to and like inspired his career, he lists Jay Leno, which, come on.
So now there's a little button at the end of this. It looks like he's sitting in a diner. It's not exactly like Tom's, but it's like basically the Seinfeld diner, and he's there with the alien, who's now alive for some reason.
Or maybe it's a different one.
The munchkin and one of the, I don't know if the other person, is, I don't know who the third person is.
Leno.
All right. Can we talk about something else?
Okay,
that's got the soup Nazi, the munchkin, and the alien.
All right. So
I thought that was actually pretty good. I mean,
you know, I just watched it for the first time while pausing it every 2 seconds, describing it. So
you gotta let it wash over you.
Yeah, I don't think I really got the flow, and I'll bet you the listeners didn't either.
Yeah, probably not.
And that's on me, and I apologize. Speaking of the listeners, Genevieve, would you like to check in with the Ad Council?
I would.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. Okay, we got the email, the electronic mail that I mentioned at the top of the show from listener Bruce that says, I obviously thought of your show when I heard this weird ad currently in heavy rotation on Cairo Podcasts. And of course, I think most of our listeners know that Cairo is K-I-R-O, a radio station around here that I used to work at. Bruce says, the guy in this commercial talks funny. You can hear it especially in two words. Genevieve, I'm going to give you this bell right here. I want you to ring that bell. We won't stop it, but ring that bell when you think you hear the words. I only identified one. But Bruce says, the guy talks funny. You can hear it especially in two words. I know you'll hear it. He sounds human, but it makes me wonder if AI is getting good enough to almost fool me. It is weird, right? And I will say that AI voices are astounding. Like, people can really...
Yeah.
I mean, this might be a real guy, and then somebody modeled AI after it. But our listeners have been doing that, sending me in, like, Terry Gross's that I would not know are not actually Terry Gross.
And can I say that when I did that face quiz about which ones are AI, it was actually the face... The way I beat the quiz was that I identified the weirder-looking faces as human.
Interesting.
And the more human they looked, the more likely it was to be AI.
Because is there something about the human face is not always symmetrical? Or
they're
never,
rarely symmetrical.
Never
yeah.
perfectly symmetrical. Okay, so take a listen to this. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with radio commercials, I will say, that also make them sound fake. Although, I think this might be... You might be onto something. This might be, like... an AI recreation of a real person or just a totally made up voice. But I will say there are other things that play in here, like compression, which is the kind of how you manipulate the audio file, that sometimes, like, radio ads just sort of sound funny anyway. But take a listen to this. And Genevieve, you ring that bell when you think you hear the two words that Bruce thinks is the tell.
Hey guys, do you know your T-Level? Revive Men's Health here in Seattle is helping you take that first step toward better health and enhanced intimacy with a free testosterone level test, exam, and consultation. Plus, for this month only, qualified patients can kickstart their treatment with a free supply of ED medication. Call Revive Men's Health Seattle at 206-529-1111. That's 206-529-1111. Or visit revivemenshealth.com.
I only heard one bell, but I heard them both this time.
The whole thing sounds so jacked to me.
Yes. You should just ring the bell.
I mean, it was just like...
like the guy from Breaking Bad.
Like the guy from Breaking Bad. Hector.
Hector.
I mean, the whole thing sounded incredibly jacked up to me. Consultation.
Yes, that was the one that I heard. Yep.
And then... like, what was the other one?
The other word, and I'm pretty sure that I'm on the same page with Bruce here, is another word that ends in shun, which I think is very telling. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but sorry, that's a cat trying to tear down our door. It's well past the cat's dinner time. But the other word was medication. Let me see if I can get to it.
Only qualified patients can kickstart their treatment with a free supply of ED medication. Call
Medicatia.
Yeah, and also he really has trouble with free. It's like sort of swallows the F.
Here, take a listen again.
This month only, qualified patients can kickstart their treatment with a free supply of ED medication.
Yeah, yeah.
Call Revive
Medicatia.
Medicatia,
yeah. So that could very easily be AI. It wouldn't even be the best AI I've
heard.
It's
not the best AI I've ever heard. If it's a real person, like... please get some diction lessons and some elocution lessons. I implore you.
It reminds me that I was like...
it's hard to listen to.
When I would sometimes, like maybe a couple of years ago, when publications like, I think the New York Times jumps to mind first, they would, you know, offer on their website press this button to listen to this article.
Right.
And sometimes I would do that. Like if I was like in the shower or something, I'm like, oh, this is actually a long read. I'll just hit play on this, yeah. You know, and listen to it. But I could never quite tell. I'm like, why do the actors that they hire, why are they editing them so they sound like robots? Because it wasn't like an obvious robot thing. And now I realize, oh, it was just early-ish AI. Yeah. And it was like, it's now it's sort of everywhere. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to guess.
This might be like the last AI that you can actually pick out of a lineup.
Exactly. In fact, I'm not 100% sure Genevieve is real right now.
Head Council, it's jingle time.
Hey, Vivian and Andrew. It's Max in Brooklyn with a quickie jingle for you. Don't know why this popped into my head, but it did. So here goes. Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace. Catch you on the flippity flop.
Nice and simple. I hear that jingle all the time, and it really lives in my head.
Like, it is an absolute earworm.
We had to get our windshield fixed a few years ago. We went with Safe Light, right?
Because I can't help but think it's just so present because of that one little jingle.
I'm looking to see. Usually I kind of dial up the actual jingle for people who don't know it, and I didn't prep it this time. Let me see here if this – I'm hitting this cold. I really don't know what we're going to hear here, but this is a commercial for Safe Light, the auto glass replacement company, and hopefully the jingle will be in this.
If your windshield needs a rock, you can reach us around the clock.
For the record, this is not what you usually hear. Usually it's just a spoken word ad, and then at the end they just say, Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
People choose us every day.
Every day.
All across the USA. Certified pros on the go.
And we keep our prices low.
Safe Light!
Whenever auto glass breaks.
Sorry, I can fix that.
Call 1-800-800-ASAP or go to safelight.com to get a free instant quote and to schedule online.
Safe Light.
None
what?
Of that. What are they doing? This must be really old. That's from Safe Light's actual YouTube page,
that
too.
Is
but it was from
16 years ago.
So, okay, couple of things here. None of what I just played backs up what Max left for us on the voicemail line. Having said that, we just discovered something amazing.
That was wild.
That is really wild. Let me see. Is there any other here? I think this will be the last thing I click on without knowing what it is. Either way, this is the last tape I'll play today.
Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
Joe, we did it.
You can't sell anything. You can sell anything.
So all of that is to say, I think boys can be funny.
Yeah. I really don't want this. I wanted to talk about Jerry Seinfeld and not just to beat up on him for being old and out of touch and saying a dumb thing. I think he did say a dumb thing. And I think he sort of popped off. And then that's why I say it's worth listening to the whole interview, not because it isn't in some ways infuriating, but because, and we'll include the link obviously with the show, not because there aren't some infuriating parts, but because he is a talented guy who contributed a lot to the culture. And I think that when he really talks himself through his thought process, he's not really that far. We're really not that far apart. I just wish that he could give some thought to like some of these knee-jerk reactions that he has. But I also like a lot of what he's even still doing, and I will watch this Pop-Tart movie. It looks funny.
I'll watch the movie,
Melissa
too.
Melissa McCarthy's in it. Hugh Grant, like a bunch of real. Oh, he has a great sort of take on Hugh Grant in the interview that's worth a listen.
I'm not boycotting Seinfeld, but for me, I don't come out as positive or forgiving of him because, number one, this wasn't something that he stumbled on. Like, yeah, I think that, you know, it is tough to be funny these days. Like, I think he's been banging this drum for years, and I think that
he's got an axe to grind, for sure.
He's got an axe to grind, and even though he contradicted himself, it wasn't in a thoughtful way where it seemed like, oh, maybe we're seeing him open to rethinking this, and maybe Remnick can be blamed for that to a degree. But Jerry Seinfeld, even though
Remnick is a total fanboy, I honestly, he irritated irritated me more than Seinfeld.
And a couple of famous New Yorkers love talking to famous New Yorkers, man.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Alec Baldwin had a whole podcast based on that premise before.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine if Baldwin and Seinfeld got together?
No, I can't.
It would be an absolute explosion of white privilege.
Anyway, so I'm still disappointed in Seinfeld. It's still like his comments that we heard today and things that he said a long time ago will always sort of live with me when I think about him.
Yeah.
And his approach to society and comedy, and it really bums me out. But having said that, I'm not saying that like we need to cancel Seinfeld or that I won't be seeing this movie. In fact, I'm bummed to see that it's only on Netflix. I was thinking we could go to the movie theater and see it. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. This was kind of a different show than we usually do, but I had a lot of fun. Genevieve, thanks for putting it all together. You can call us at 607-444-5597. That's 607-444-5597 if you want to sing your jingles for us or just weigh in on anything we talked about today, as long as you agree with us, or tell us about some commercials you've been seeing. You can also email us. You can electronically email us or electronically mail us at afterthesemessagesshow@gmail.com. Also, if you want to record a voice memo and email it that way, that'd be great. And check us out on Facebook if you want to join the community conversation there. Just look for After These Messages Show on Facebook. I think I'm done.
All right.
How you doing?
I'm good.
All right, everybody. You have a great week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Boys can be funny.
I don't know. I've never found a boy funny.
Well, I think boys can be funny, okay? I just think maybe they haven't had the opportunity to be funny for as long as girls have.
They were always raised to be like, oh, you look so handsome. It's like they never need to be funny.
Exactly.
I just think it's biological. Guys are not funny. It's just because they're just not.